right, welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike. Go on the Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, literally no better time in the world than right now. College football, SEC football is back. How you doing, my friend?
Mike, great news. College football's back. Week zero, five games on Saturday. We've got a full slate, 91 games. This weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, a college football buffet. That is the best news I have heard in so long. I can't wait for this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
And shout out Cousin Sven. He was in Dublin for the week zero game. So, I mean, he's already partaken down there in Europe. So, I mean, that's wild. Shout out Cousin Sven. But pretty soon, Stephen, we'll all be partaking in this SEC action. Literally no better time. But there's only one way, Stephen, only one way to make it a little bit better. And that's to put some money where your mouth is, if you know what I'm saying. So head on over to mybookie.ag. That's the website, MyBookie, the online sports book. They're partnered with us all football season. They're presenting sponsor of the show yet again. And they got a heck of a deal right now, Stephen, for all the cousins out there. If you go over to MyBookie and put in an initial deposit, they'll ask you for a promo code. That promo code SEC, it's on the screen there. Check this out, Stephen. They've changed it up a little bit for the cousins. It's better than ever, I think. Whatever your initial bet is, it could be all the way from $10, I believe, or as low as $10, all the way up to $500. If you win, you get to keep the money. You can do whatever, you can cash out and peace out. But if you lose, whatever that amount you wagered, again, up to $500, if you lose, they just give it right back to you. And you got $500 to keep playing with over at MyBookie with that promo code SEC. So there's no way you can lose.
Mike, this feels like, in a football sense, it's like the end of the half. And I'm just going to throw a Hail Mary in the end zone. And if it works out, it's great. It's a touchdown. And if not, it's going out the back of the end zone. And no harm, no foul. What a great offer from our friends over there at MyBookie. So, man, maybe you like this team back here, the Crimson Tide, to cover this weekend.
You know who I think will like that deal, Stephen, is John Mateer. But and another deal that some of these players will love, shout out our friends over at Tennessee Legends Distillery. If your package store does not have Tennessee Legends, then tell them and we'll get it sent over to you. So I wish I was feeling a little bit better. I'm still recovering, Stephen, but I'm so happy that college football's here that if I was feeling better, I'd be chugging this Tennessee Legends. And I'm hoping to get back on my feet so that this weekend I can consume some of this fine, fine Tennessee whiskey. You know what?
Mike, you told me last time not to be Mr. Negative, Mr. Optimism. So how much of that Tennessee Legends bottle is going to be consumed when Tennessee beats Syracuse this weekend?
Oh, thank you for saying beat, because I thought you were going to say lose and I was going to say the whole bottle. But no, after they win by multiple touchdowns, you better believe the celebratory drinks will commence. So, I can't wait for it. And I can't wait to get into this SEC action with you, Stephen. So let's just dive right in. And we had a little bit of breaking news. I wanted to get right off the top. I see the cousins they're over the moon about this, Stephen. But South Carolina got some fantastic news from the NCAA today, because their running back that they've been waiting for, Rashul Faison, he's been officially cleared to compete for the Gamecocks like he should have been months ago. How big a news is this for the Gamecocks heading into the opener against Virginia Tech?
Mike, it's huge. You know, just looking at what South Carolina lost last season with Rocket Sanders moving on. Faison's a 1,000-yard rusher from Utah State. Not maybe expecting him to rush for 1,000 yards. They could kind of split this up, but I think that's kind of been the theme for the South Carolina backfield this offseason. Like, by committee, you add another proven weapon to the stable. So losing a pretty productive player in Rocket Sanders, getting Faison, I think that's a big deal for this team. So great news for a South Carolina offense that has a ton of potential to take off this year.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this guy play based on all the stuff I've heard about him. So very, very good news here for the Gamecocks. Hey, we also had some other SEC news. You know, I think this was to be expected, but I just wanted to get your quick thoughts for all the Wildcats out there, Stephen. But Zach Calzada officially named the starting quarterback for Kentucky. What's your read on that? I mean, personally, I kind of would have been concerned if he wasn't the starter. Of course, maybe that just means Cutter Bowley is much better than anticipated, but what's your read on this?
Mike, I agree with you. I think it's a good thing that Zach Calzada won this job because Kentucky brought him in to sort of stabilize this position. He's a senior. He's been around the SEC, started big-time ball for Texas A&M. He was at Auburn for a while. Also very productive at Incarnate Word. So I think if he didn't win the job, you could look at it as well. Maybe Cutter had just improved so much in one offseason. But I also think given where Kentucky is with all the new pieces, you need some stability. You need a proven guy who can push the ball down the field, kind of help this offense get back on track. So I think it's a good thing that Calzada is the starter for what I think is a pretty tricky opener against Toledo.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, we're already getting some donations. So shout out Cousin Clint. Got to know if Cousin Shane is not on because he's in the picket line at the non-Cracker Barrel. That is true. And shout out Cousin Rick. How did Tennessee logo jump ahead of Texas logo in the alphabetical helmet? I mean, that's blame that on my sickness there, Rick. I can switch that back. Well, I can't do it while we're live, but I didn't even notice that. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. I blame the illness on that one, but we do appreciate the donation. All right. So, Stephen, we got a lot to hit on here. And since the last time we've been on, it's wild, right? I mean, we're finally at game day. We're so excited about college football. And then they like to dump all this crap at us that we could have done all offseason on the SEC 9-game schedule. But they're like, hey, here it is. For all I know, Stephen, probably in about an hour, they're going to announce the playoffs expanding to 48 just so we can, be focused on it instead of the actual games, which is what we should care about. But I got to get your reaction to the SEC announcing they're going to move to a 9-game conference schedule in 2026. What's your thoughts?
I love it. More SEC on SEC is good. It's good for college football. It's great for fans. If you think about it, like if I'm just a season ticket holder at one of these schools, trading out maybe an FCS opponent, a G5 blowout for another SEC game is a huge win. Competitive balance. You know, we look at this in other conferences that have 9 games, and you do see like there's the 5 home games, 4 road games split every year. So there's going to be some weird stuff, but it also gives you a chance to have one more SEC game, sort of balance out the schedule. Like, Texas schedule's a little bit easier than some of these other teams this year. Well, what if they played Alabama as their 9th game? So I think there's no downside to this other than it's going to add more losses probably to the middle of the conference. And maybe there's not as many bowl teams, but if you tell me we're getting 9 games for each team in the SEC, rotating through all the opponents quicker, getting some fresh matchups out there, I love it for the SEC. So I think it is a win. You also combine that with the playoff metrics changes. The SEC has been a big winner this offseason and all this changing college football landscape.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I just think the fans are the biggest winners here in all of this, and I couldn't be more excited. Now, it is going to be kind of crazy with who gets the 5, who gets the 4. We will, that'll come at a later date. But let me ask you one follow-up, Stephen, because people are kind of obsessing, and I get it. When this news dropped, that was naturally going to be the next question, and that is, well, who are the 3 for each conference team? And it seems like it's very difficult for fans to wrap their heads around this, but because I'm right there with you, because that is naturally what I ask too, who's going to be the 3 for everybody? But what is your response to my belief that I don't think it truly matters. And I know people are like, what the hell? How does it not matter? It doesn't matter because even if you have a three that is perceived to be insanely difficult, or you have a 3 that is perceived to be insanely light, the other 6 is going to, whatever, however your schedule is perceived with the 3, the other 6 is going to balance that out. Like Well, I'll just use Tennessee as an example. And I don't think that Tennessee is going to get Alabama, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt, even though I have kind of thrown that out there. But let's say it is. Let's say Tennessee does get Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky, and the rest of the SECs. Well, that's not fair. Vanderbilt, Kentucky's two of your three. Well, what they're going to do then to Tennessee is say, well, this year you got Georgia, you got Texas, you got LSU, you got Ole Miss, and all of a sudden you're like, good Lord, how can anybody survive this? And then guess what? The next year, you got Oklahoma, you got Florida, you got on and on and on. I think the six is going to balance out everybody's three. That's just my belief. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think, first of all, nine-game schedules in the SEC is going to be a bloodbath. I mean, we got to get comfortable with everybody probably losing at least once, maybe even twice. Like, these schedules are strength of schedule metrics are a little weird from, like, metric to metric, and it's hard. There's only 12 games in college football, so it's hard to weigh them. But if you look, whether it's like ESPN, somebody else, like the SEC teams are clearly always at the top of strength of schedule. Now, you add a ninth game and you add a 10th game against a power conference opponent, which has already been there, these schedules are going to be insanely difficult. So to your point, if you're rotating through your six opponents, like, you got your three permanents, but your six opponents are rotating. Also, they've already indicated they're taking into account, like, competitive balance when they schedule, whether it's the three permanents or maybe even the future. I think the schedules are going to balance out. You're going to have some years where it's just impossible to have an even slate, or there's going to be some quirky stuff. But I think for the most part, regardless of who the permanent opponents are, if your permanent opponents over the last 5-10 years have been easier, your six are probably going to be a little harder.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out. We just got another donation, Stephen, from the Mediocre Musician. What a name. That's a great name. I'm a week late, but thank you, Stephen, up for the membership. Roll Tide. Love the pod, gentlemen. Thank you, Mediocre Musician. And just for you thanking Stephen up and his donation, I'm going to play Stephen up's theme here.
Boys showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Stephen up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Stephen up, and thank you, Mediocre Musician. Hey, shout out Clint, gave us another donation. If you have seen any of the Corso tributes, you can admit you teared up, because I sure as hell did. Long live the headgear picks. Have you seen it, any of the tributes? I've just seen the stuff floating around on social media. I know ESPN, I think they did like a special. I missed the special, but I do have it recorded. Have you seen any of that, Stephen?
Mike, I haven't had a chance to watch the special on ESPN. I did see some of the clips. And man, I got to say this about Lee Corso. I loved as a kid watching him on Saturdays for game day, put on the mascot helmet. Not so fast, my friend. Like, he was one of the first, like, personalities that ESPN and college football had. And I think it's also just been really nice. Like, you know, coming back from the stroke and still being a part of game days on Saturday, it's just been kind of like it's almost like the nostalgic reminder that every Saturday I could turn on the TV and he would be there. So I sure as heck am going to miss him, but I'm glad to see him out there one more time, and especially at such a big environment like Texas and Ohio State. So I will definitely be watching some Lee Corso tributes for sure this week.
Right, yeah. He made college football fun, and he helped pave the way for guys like Stephen and I to do this show. So thank you, Lee Corso. You are a legend. I don't know if he's in the College Football Hall of Fame, but if he's not, I mean, they're doing it wrong. You know what?
The College Football Hall of Fame has some weird, you mean like the with the Mike Leach, right, you know, thing. That's a good question. Is he in the Hall of Fame for college football?
Well, they need to get it in there for personalities or just for spreading love of the game, yeah, for no other reason. You know what?
You know, it's like with the NFL has like that contributor to the game, whether it's been like a journalist or like the NFL films or somebody who contributed to the growth of the NFL. Like, he would be perfect, the perfect person to induct first time for college football. If he's not in there, Mike, ever, I think he's number one in our hearts with the college football fans, right?
Yep, and it'll pave the way for Cousin Shane to get in there one day. Hey, shout out Hobby Hangout. If it's COVID, Plaxovid, get some rest before game day. I don't know what that, I hope I didn't say a curse word there. I don't know what that means. But thank you, Hobby Hangout, for the advice. I don't know. I've not been tested, so If I die on, you know, spread the word, like, subscribe, help Steven and Shane out if I pass out. And but hey, shout out Horns Down Dave. We appreciate you. He just gifted a membership to Alton. Let's see. Alton Rick. Alton, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Thank you, Horns Down Dave. I love these creative names out here. You know what?
Man, cousins showing up early in the week. Everybody's fired up for game day. Great names, great vibes, man. I can't wait. I can't wait for this season, man.
All right. Well, let's get into next topic here, Steven. So Steven is going to preview each and every SEC game from the least challenging to the most difficult challenging. So that's what we're going to dive into on this episode. But before we do that, real quick, hey, we are also, once again, this is like year five or six in a row, Steven, that we are sponsored by Prize Picks Daily Fantasy Sports. So I hit this up on the last episode with some season props that I'm very, very excited about in the SEC. I sent the complete list over to Steven, and I haven't even seen his list, so he could have some of the same ones that I have. But I'm fascinated to know, Steven, where you are at with some of these outstanding prop that we have over at Prize Picks. And if you go over to prizepicks.com and use that promo code SEC, they got a special deal for the cousins. If you play $5, they'll give you 50. Five for 50, Steven. You can't beat that. And Steven's about to give you some winners here for season prop totals over at Prize Picks. So what do you got for us, Steven?
Mike, let's start with passing yardage, and let's go.
Oh wait, can I take a guess? Arch Manning.
Actually, I didn't take a side on this one, but stay tuned. We can make it to 10. Let's go to the guy we talked about, or to the team we talked about a few minutes ago, Lenore Sellers. He is at 20. He's at 2,500 in passing yards. He was over that mark last season. Of course, that accounts into bowl yardage, but something I always think about, and I'm going to take the more than side of this. Quarterbacks, as they progress through their career, should see like the trend line in passing yards go up. I still think he's going to maintain that dynamic rushing ability and all that. But I think if you're South Carolina, keeping him healthy, number one, is a priority. Your receivers, there's some optimism about this group breaking out this year. Maybe the Mike Shula taking over, the tweaks to the offense. That says to me, I think, in his second year, he should be more comfortable as a passer. So he was around 2,500 last year. Give me the more than side on Lenore Sellers' passing yards.
Yeah, I love that one. And it's interesting you went there, Steven, because I went yesterday. I went the more than for Sellers with passing touchdowns, which I believe they're at 20, if I'm not mistaken, or 19 and a half, something like that. So, yeah, I love the fact that you like the more than with the passing yards. I'm right there with you. I like the passing touchdowns slightly better. But, you know, again, South Carolina fans certainly are not sleeping on Sellers. But I think nationally he may be being slept on just a little bit. I know there's a ton of hype with him. But, I mean, the guy, he may legitimately be the best quarterback in the nation. And, Steven, you know, you're number one, Steven, in my book, but there's a contender. There's a contender for number one, Steven. I hate to admit it. And it's Steven up. He's gifted a membership.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven up. He is gifted a membership to UK, man, this is a tough one. Bear with me here. UKNDOIT. UKNDOIT. Welcome to
the family.
Sorry that I butchered your name. I'm sick. And thank you, Stephen, up for donating. That's very, very nice of you. And we also had a donation, Stephen, from, man, these Texas fans are feeling it. Shout out Alex Rivera. Texas will go 11-1 this year. Only game that scares me is on the road at Georgia. Hashtag hook'em, hashtag natty season loading. Could you see, I know you're very high on Texas, Stephen. 11-1, that is very, as difficult as that may be, 11-1 is very realistic for them Longhorns, don't you think?
I do. I think if you asked me for a record projection, I would pick Texas to finish 11-1. I will say I know the Georgia game is probably the toughest in the minds of some Texas fans. I mean, Texas is a slight underdog for this week's game against Ohio State. Ohio State, a lot of new faces. I still think this is going to be hard. Also, at Florida, Oklahoma, and Dallas, especially if Oklahoma's offense hits. So the schedule is pretty favorable for Texas. And it wouldn't stun me if they finished 10-2, but I like the more than side if we're considering like Prize Picks talk here. I like 11-1, and I like Texas to win the national championship this year.
Yeah, all right, calm down, Steve. Calm down. We got all season to talk about that. Hey, shout out, it's Savvy. He gave us a donation. How do you become a member to the best SEC pod on YouTube? MIZFKU. Thank you. It's Savvy. I put a link in the description there, and you can follow that. Oh, I think I may have even screwed it up, but if you follow that link, you can become a member. I'm going to do it one more time because I think I screwed it up. But all right, sorry to get so off track. Oh, shout out Dakota. He just gifted a membership. Steven, we got the best cousins on the planet supporting us. That's who's really, and he got gifted a membership to It's Savvy. So Savvy, you're in, brother. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy of cousin Dakota. So we can't thank you enough, Dakota, and we can't thank you enough, Savvy here. Or Savvy, excuse me.
Welcome to the family.
All right. Who's next on your list here, Steven, of player projections via Prize Picks?
I'm going to throw out two more passing yards, more than sides here. How about Austin Simmons, 2,750? Small sample size, really impressed with Austin Simmons last year. And I know you can't read too much into last season, the year before, but Jackson Dart was over 3,000 in 2023. He was also over 4,000 last year. So offense will tweak differently. Lane Kiffin will certainly build this group to his strength. But it feels like to me Austin Simmons as a first-time starter, especially with a favorable schedule, should be able to go over that. I like almost like 3,000 passing yards. I would also throw out, Mike, 2,400 for DJ Lagway. I'll take the more than side. I'll take a gamble that he will stay healthy for the entire season. Am I crazy on either one of those?
No, not at all. And now I would kind of stay away from DJ Lagway just because of the injury history. Fingers crossed that he is healthy and he has one heck of a season. I think he will. I think the Gators will. I've been on it all off season, so I'm not backing down off that necessarily. So I'm rooting for him, but I would not, I don't know if I'd run over to Prize Picks all that one, just given the history, but I love your take on Austin Simmons. Cause that was the same one that I liked on yesterday's show. And even Steven, I know Rebel fans, they hate me right now. Cause I am saying they're going to take a step back this year. And even when I say step back, I'm saying like 8-4, which is a record, you know, 2/3 of this conference would kill for this year. But even if they struggle a little bit, Steven, and they lose a game or two that maybe we don't see on the schedule, I think that helps Austin Simmons in this regard because we're just looking at passing yards. So if you're down, obviously, what does that mean? That means you're going to be throwing the ball a lot more. We believe in his talent. We believe in the track record. We believe in Lane Kiffin. So again, I like all these that you're picking here, Steven, but I think I like Austin Simmons most of all among the Prize Picks pass yard projections.
I also think you could make a case like early in the season, build some confidence, especially week one against Georgia State. You're trying to build some confidence before that trip to Kentucky. And I mean, you look back at last year, and I know it's not necessarily one for one, but Jackson Dart threw for over 400 yards against Furman, 377 against Middle Tennessee. Like, they're not shy about chucking it around against bad teams. So I could see him piling up some yards early in the season to get him acclimated for this SEC slate.
Right. And then do you have any rushings yards for us that you like?
I got one that I feel great about and one I'm kind of like, I'm not sure about. I got Ahmad Hardy, 850 yards. I'm going to take the more than side. It just seems like he has the clearest an easiest path to 1,000 yards or the carries in this conference. So many committees, so many talented backs, but Ahmad Hardy's the dude. And Missouri knows how to churn out 1,000-yard rushers. So I like him to threaten 1,000 yards this year.
Yeah, not one thing you didn't even mention, Stephen, but obviously with the – now maybe they got two outstanding quarterbacks in Prabula and Horn, but the fact that they're still kind of trying to figure that out also would lead one to believe that they're going to lean on that ground game while these quarterbacks try to solve it. So everything points to Ahmad Hardy having one heck of a year. I know that that total is relatively high. You know, it's hard to come into this conference and dominate and just get 900 yards. But if anyone's poised to do it, I think it's Ahmad Hardy.
I do too. I think just based upon, you know, it, Jaden Baugh, Trey Wisner, Le'Veon Moss. I mean, there's so many good running backs in here. But if you just think about it, like if you were drafting a fantasy team, you're looking at probably a lot of running back by committees there. And Hardy's got like 250, 270 carries. They're bringing him in to be the workhorse and to fill in that number one role. So I think that's about as safe as you can get at running back. And I think it would be probably near the top of my prize picks, like favorites.
Right. And then so which rushing total are you iffy on, though? Now I'm curious.
I was tempted to take the under on Le'Veon Moss at 774. It's not a talent issue. It's more of a like backfield. You know, you throw Amari Daniels. I think very highly of Reuben Owens. I think there's a chance that he, you know, rebounds this year too. You're trying to feed three running backs. That might be hard, especially for somebody coming off a knee injury.
Right. Anybody that missed it, Coach Elko came out in his week one press conference, says Moss is good to go. So he projects to play. You know, not that there was really any doubt on that, but just to confirm that. So, you know, that was relevant news today. I see what you're saying. I mean, keep in mind, Steven, I'm someone that I've got A&M going to the playoffs. So they may want to limit his carries and save him for the college football playoff. So, yeah, Again, you really got to listen to what Steven's saying here. It's not necessarily that he's a bad player. It's not that he's going to have a down year, but there's going to be a lot of options. There's a lot of buzz about Marcel Reed, and there's a lot of buzz about Casey Concepcion. I mean, they may want to spread the wealth this season in College Station. So, even though I'm high on A&M, Steven, I'm not disliking that take at all.
It's like kind of like I mentioned, is like it's not a knock on talent, just like it's more of like an opportunity thing.
Right.
And also to your point, you need more than one running back probably to make it through the SEC season. And so if you can kind of ease Le'Veon Moss in these first 2 weeks before you play Notre Dame and some of these other games, I mean, you've got the best offensive line, one of the best offensive lines in the country. So I think there's an argument that he ends up probably around 650, 700 yards, and there's two other running backs that are also very productive in this offense.
All right. Do you have any more? Do you have any receiving totals that you like?
I do. I got two receiving totals and I got two passing touchdowns for you. I'll throw out the receivers. See what you think of these. I like Kevin Concepcion. He's 598.5 at Prize Picks, and also Deion Burks more than 749.5. I'm being a little bold with that one.
Right. Any concern with the injuries? You know, he missed a lot of last season, but, you know, if John Mateer is who he says he is, and I bet he is, then Deion Burks will, I think he'll smash that as well, provided he stays healthy, of course. So, Casey Concepcion, I love that one. And pretty confident like you on Deion Burks. So, yeah, I'm not disliking either one of those, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I like Burks to be Mateer's go-to guy. And just seeing how things shaked out at Washington State last season, again, not one for one. They had a 1,000-yard receiver up there. And Deion Burks is pretty supremely talented. He just needs to stay healthy. So I am concerned about those injuries. But it's like I can see how this goes where Mateer's big playability catches on. Burks is healthy. They hit on a few big plays throughout the year. And you know, he's up there. I like him potentially be an All-America caliber receiver this year, provided he stays healthy for the full season.
Right. And I also like, Steven, Crazy Cheese Whiz What is
that? Great name.
He gifted a membership. I'm trying to find out the Crazy Cheese Wiz. He has gifted Wes May. Wes, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Thank you, Crazy Cheese Wiz, and welcome Wes May to the family. And we also had a donation shout out. It's Savi. He's back. Steven, $5. Here's the other one. Now that Mike's a movie star, I don't know about that. What's the inside scoop on season two? Any given Saturday, any chance drink? Let's cameras in the locker room. I don't have the official news by any means. I hope I'm not like breaking any news or anything. But my understanding is that they plan to do another season of the Netflix show. And it's also my understanding that, well, in fact, he came out publicly and said this, so this is fine to say. But Greg Sankey is wanting every single team to participate. So I think they would be wise to listen to the commissioner while he's determining their three permanent rivals. I just say that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hold that over their head. We're choosing those three rivals. You probably need to participate in this. Mike did a great job on the show too. So congrats to you, and have enjoyed watching that to see all the great behind the scenes stuff in the SEC.
Yeah, and if anyone pays close attention, you can catch Steven in some of that as well. They got his voice in there, so go check that out. Maybe the little Easter eggs for you guys to go track down. But all right, you said you got some passing touchdowns also for us, Steven.
Absolutely. You mentioned one earlier, the Norris Sellers, 19.5. Let's go more than. And Mike, we can't talk about passing touchdowns without mentioning Arch Manning. 24.5. Give me the more than side, because Arch Manning's going to win the Heisman Trophy come December.
I mean, he might have 25 by November, the way they're hyping this kid up. So, I'm all here for it, Steven. I'm fully bought in. Well, I'll be fully bought in come Saturday if he whoops Ohio State's ass. We'll just crown him. And I hope he does, because to hell with the luck eyes, you know what? But, that's going to be, I think, I would imagine, if I just had to guess, I would imagine that's a very popular more than over at Prize Picks is Arch Manning.
I would probably wager that's one of the better ones. Mike, I would also say teasing the game against Ohio State this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised if the story isn't defense coming out of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Manning doesn't play as big a role as we think.
Well, I'll tell you who does play a big role here, Steven, and that's Cody MCC. He just became a member. Cody, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Cody. So we've gotten through all your Prize Picks selections, right?
That's right. Yeah, Mike, do you like my picks? You think I'm crazy on any of these?
Crazy on the Arch one, but I'm kind of just fading your Arch love at this point in time, but... No, I really like Lenore Sellers. That was one that I hit on, and sure, yeah, I think Arch. I'm kind of kidding. I think Arch will be great. I don't know if he'll win the Heisman, not this year. I think he wins it his senior year, but we'll see about that. But I'm just so ready to talk about Week 1 action in the SEC. So let's dive into it, Steven. We're going to hit on all the teams here. Steven has it ranked from the least challenging to the most challenging for the SEC in Week 1. So where are we starting with the easiest layup on the board?
We're going to go down to Gainesville, and we're going to go see Long Island at Florida. Mike, do you know what the nickname of Long Island is?
I mean, I just have to assume that it's the Sharks based on this Tiburon looking thing that from the video game. Is that right?
It is. So somewhere Jim McElwain just perked up, wanted to get the games of this weekend. Mike, Long Island, it's been a struggle. They are 12-22, like over the last like three or four seasons under Coach Ron Cooper. If you've heard that name, he's bounced around the SEC as an assistant. So they are last on this list because they have not been very good. They're projected to be one of the worst teams in their conference. I think if you just look at history, they lost 45-0 to TCU last season. It should be an easy win for Florida. I would like to see Florida and all of these pieces get some live reps. Like, let's see DJ Lagway. Let's see these receivers play a full, first or second quarter to get some reps and knock the rust off. But little challenge expected here by Long Island.
Yeah, and I should have also kind of led with this. I apologize for, we're 35 minutes in here and bringing it up. But Billy Napier was asked about Lagway today, and he said he's been 100% the last couple of days. He will start for Long Island. So just wanted to get that out there in case anybody missed that news. But also, I wanted to get this out there, Stephen, because we can never forget this news. Shout out. The legend, JR.
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
This is the third live show we've had today, Stephen, and the third time JR has blessed us with his presence. What a cousin. Even for that midday meltdown, that's probably what we'll rename that show. It was such a shit show. But JR was there, and he has just gifted Ernie, MD. Ernie, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy of the legend,
the
JR.
Memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by cousin JR.
Thank you, JR. We really, really appreciate all your contributions here. But look, do we even need to ask? It's LIU.
I just had to get the McWayne thing in there, you know.
So needless to say, Stephen, there's no coach that could face more. Well, there are probably, but who, if Billy Napier drops this one, what is the first thought that pops into Stephen Lassen's head if they lose to Long Island?
My guess is Billy Napier is probably not the coach there much longer. this you want to talk about like all time upsets? This would be it, right?
Okay, I just wanted to get that on the record because I have 1,000% agree, but I didn't want to. I can only say that we got to fire this guy a million times before I got to get someone else to say it.
Mike, if you remember back to last season, you and I were sitting here saying, "Man, this is Florida's best team. They're going to beat Miami and they get smoked." So it's probably a good thing they're playing Long Island and we have some early doubts about them. That probably means they're going to be okay this year.
Right. All right. So which game's next on your list here, Stephen?
Let's go to Fayetteville. Let's go to Alabama A&M at Arkansas. So a little bit of a comparison here. Alabama A&M lost to Auburn 73-3 last year. They were picked fourth in the SWAC East. So not expecting a ton of resistance here. I think if I'm Arkansas, I'm just looking at this as like, it's our preseason game. We've got to get all these new faces some reps. Taylen Green's new receivers, the offensive line, all the new pieces on defense, because Arkansas State, Memphis, Ole Miss are coming up. There's not much of a runway here for Arkansas. So I suspect Taylen Green is going to put on a show here in what is a very favorable matchup for Arkansas.
Yeah, I can't imagine that this is going to be much of a game here, but this is exactly what the doctor ordered for some of these teams. Kind of, it's almost like a preseason type game. So, this one's more about Arkansas than anything.
Absolutely, I think it's always hard to read into some of these games because the scores are going to be so lopsided, and somebody could shine, and you're like, wow, there's the next star. But the opponent and when some of these guys play is always like one of those things you have to take into context. But I think the biggest thing is like it's an empty the bench kind of game. You want to get Taylen Green in, get him some reps, put up a big score, get him out, let everybody play. Because I think the next couple of weeks, like Arkansas State can put up a fight at least. You've got Ole Miss, you've got a road trip to Memphis, then you get Notre Dame coming up. So there's not a whole lot of runway here for Sam Pittman and his team. Like they've got to get everybody into the game, avoid any injuries, and leave here with an impressive showing. And I think the worst thing for Arkansas would be kind of a game they don't put Alabama A&M away.
Right. Yeah. And I was just throwing this up, Stephen, for we got all these week one games, but not half of them, but close to half. there's not even a respectable point spread to, to wager.
Right.
So we're going to get those out of the way first. So who's next on that list?
Going Charleston Southern at Vanderbilt. Charleston Southern is probably one of the worst 20 to 25 teams at the FCS level. They are 5-18 over the last 2 years. They lost 41-7 to a bad Florida State team last year. You can see why they're at the bottom of the list. So, you know, Mike, you said it best. This is more, it's more about Vanderbilt. And I think if I'm Vanderbilt, given the schedule, Virginia Tech, South Carolina coming up, I am going to be terrified if Diego Pavia has like 15 carries in this game. He better just stand in the pocket and save some wear and tear, because they're going to need him to be at his best against Virginia Tech and South Carolina. So looking forward to seeing Pavia as always, and some of the new weapons around him, like a Trent Hudson, Trey Richardson, seeing how those guys step up in their first game at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, this should be all about trying to set career passing passing high for Diego Pavia. I would tell him not to run it one time in this game if we didn't have to. You know what?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds crazy to say this, but it's like you don't want him to take any unnecessary hits, because he's got to be 100% to I mean, Virginia Tech on the road in Blacksburg is going to be hard the next week. So if there's a chance you can save some wear and tear, work on the passing game, this is the perfect opportunity.
All right, so what's your next game on your list here?
Central Arkansas at Missouri. I think I found a spread for this game where Missouri's like a 37-point favorite, so kind of gives you an idea of what we're expecting here. Central Arkansas was picked fifth in their conference. They're a solid top 30 to 40 type FCS team. If this game is close, though, that's a big concern for Missouri. Just on paper, Missouri usually takes care of business in these games. Central Arkansas is not a top 25 team at the FCS level. So I think what I'm watching for, it's no surprise, it's the quarterbacks for Missouri. What do you get out of Prabula? What do you get out of Sam Horn? Are both guys in the huddle before they break the field for the first time? And there's some suspense. And then Prabula trots in and takes the first series. So just interested to see how this Missouri offense looks with all the new faces. And we got a chance to see Kansas on Saturday. Kansas plays Wagner this week as well. So they'll be 2-0. So it'll be a good chance to kind of see Kansas and through a couple games, and see Missouri and kind of see how they stack up going into that week two showdown.
Is it believable that Missouri will really, really hold things back and play vanilla? Because we have seen this coaching staff do this before previously. I'm trying to think of what year. I think it was the year they won 11 games even. They said after their big win over Kansas State, they came out and admitted they had been holding things back. Could you see them do that this week in anticipation for Kansas?
I was wondering that too, because I guess on one hand, you want to see your two quarterbacks duke it out. Now, maybe the coaching staff just thinks there is a clear leader at quarterback, and giving both guys a chance to play is the right thing to do, given how they battled. But I don't know if you want to show your full hand offensively, because you want to make Kansas prepare for extra stuff or catch them off guard in week two. So I'm going to guess that maybe we see a little bit of both. Like, we see some offensive fireworks from Missouri, but we don't see the full arsenal. And maybe this is a great thing with Prabula, like Pavia. Do you really want him to be running 10 to 15 times in this game? Like, I would rather save that for Kansas.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what's the next game on your list here?
Going to Athens, Georgia hosting Marshall. If you're a Georgia fan, you might look at last year's standings and see Marshall won the Sun Belt. This might be a problem. They've got over 60 new players on the roster. They've got a new coach, Tony Gibson. He's a veteran defensive coordinator. Old SEC friend Carlos Del Rio Wilson may start a quarterback for Marshall in this game. So they have just three returning starters. What I'm trying to tell you is this is a completely different Marshall team than the one that finished last season. So I'm expecting Georgia to handle their business here. Curious about Gunnar Stockton. This is a good opportunity to kind of flex his muscles a little bit this week, and then Austin Peay the following week. And also just seeing Georgia kind of empty the bench. See some of the young players. interested, like Juan Gaston, does he win a starting job on the offensive line? So a lot of intrigue for me in some of the things. The score shouldn't be in question. It's more about like the individual for me for Georgia here.
Mm-hmm. And the spread, as I saw today, is around 40, 30, yeah. 39 and a half. So, again, we got a spread for this one, but yeah, that should give you an indication of where things are for them dogs this weekend.
If this one's close, it's not great for Georgia. It may give Kirby some motivating tactics for that Tennessee game in a few weeks, but they'll take care of business here.
All right, so what would be the next game?
Illinois State at Oklahoma. Illinois State's a pretty solid FCS team. They're ranked in the preseason top 10, been a pretty consistent playoff team at the FCS level. But still, I think Oklahoma should still take care of business here. And for me, there's a ton of intrigue in what happens here. I want to see what this Oklahoma offense looks like. There's also in the back of my mind, the same thing we talked about with Missouri applies to Oklahoma here. How much of a show do you want to put on with Michigan coming to town next week? So I look for Mateer to have a nice, like, two quarters of work, maybe. They get him out, they get him ready for Michigan. Oklahoma should still take care of business here.
Right. And I mean, I think it kind of goes without saying, though, that I mean, every game referenced, we would be surprised if it's even competitive by halftime, right? I mean, is that too bold of a statement?
That's fair. Yeah, I would be stunned if one of these games is within one score at halftime. Something has gone terribly wrong.
Right. All right. So, again, Steven's ranking these in order of least competitive or biggest threatening game to most threatening game. And we're going to get we're taking baby steps here into competitive football. So who's next on your list?
We're going to Oxford. Georgia State at Ole Miss. So Georgia State has a lot of old SEC friends. Del McGee is the head coach. Branson Robinson is at running back. Rashad Amos is also at running back. If you like really solid G5 players, the receiver for Georgia State, Ted Hurst, is a great player. But I should say they did beat Vanderbilt last year, but overall as a season, they were at the bottom of the Sun Belt East. Coming into this year, also picked at the bottom of the Sun Belt East. Very much a work in progress. I have them rated about the 112th best team in the country. So wow. pretty big gap, but the radar is also up because they brought in a lot of new pieces this offseason. They beat Vanderbilt. So little bit of unknown here with Georgia State, but still, I think this is a lot of this game is to me is about Ole Miss and not necessarily about what the final score is.
Man, even against the SEC killers down there. Yeah. That's fascinating. Right. But Hugh Jackson is the offensive coordinator, which is pretty, I mean, that guy's had a wild career, hadn't he? That now he's freaking Georgia State offensive coordinator. But I did see Kiffin tried to play that card like, man, you guys don't even know about this Georgia State. They got a Hugh Jackson down there. So I thought that was kind of comical. But
I think they had Jim Chaney last year was their offensive coordinator. So
they've got some real winners down there. Yeah. So Ole Miss should open a can on them. But all right. And then next game.
Let's go to UTSA at Texas A&M. So UTSA is pretty solid. I've got them ranked number 4 in the American. They're maybe like a top 50 to 60 type team. I think they are a perfect week one opponent for Texas A&M because they can do some things offensively, especially in the pass game. Their quarterback, Owen McCown, that is Josh McCown's son, by the way, if you want to feel old. They have great receivers, 11 returning starters on offense. So they can probably move the ball against Texas A&M. This will give A&M's defense a lot of good work. They have 0 returning starters on defense. So that should be a good opportunity for Marcel Reed and Texas A&M's receivers to kind of get some work against a very much a UTSA defense in transition.
Wow. So I don't know if there's a way we can go more than or less than on the rushing total, but I would have to imagine A&M's going to have a field day with this defense that returns 0 starters. If our offense doesn't go up and down the field, there's going to be a problem here in College Station.
I think, you know, we talked about like Missouri and like, what do you hold back here? And I think maybe you see that from Texas A&M, especially with Notre Dame coming up in Utah State next week. I could also see them going, we've got these new receivers. We got to get Marceau Reed going. It's the perfect opponent to kind of take out, like work out some of the new pieces and some of the transition here. So if A&M's offense struggles, that's not a great sign going into week 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, are we getting into some competitive ball games here now, Stephen?
We are. These next couple are pretty close, but I think this one will make Cousin Shane happy. Let's go to Atlanta for Syracuse and Tennessee. There's a lot of orange going to be in Atlanta for this one. old SEC friend Fran Brown did a great job last year up at Syracuse. They won 10 games. But if you kind of look at how they won those 10 games, it was largely based on the offense. Like Kyle McCord had a prolific season after transferring in from Ohio State. But they have a completely different lineup. Steve Angeli, the Notre Dame transfer, is taking over at quarterback. Revamped offensive line. They lost their best playmakers at receiver. Defense gave up 29 points a game last year. Had issues against the run. Had issues against the pass. They're losing a lot. This is definitely a step back year for Syracuse. But there's also a ton of intrigue for me for Tennessee. I just think Syracuse, the 10 wins last year was one thing. It's a completely different team coming into this matchup in Atlanta, and that's why they're lower as far as upset potential on this list.
Yeah, interesting. So you're not buying into any of this. And again, it seems like it's all kind of blown over already, but first week or so of Tennessee camp was doom and gloom. But even despite that, you think the Vols should smooth or it should be smooth sailing to a win here in Atlanta?
I think the one thing that worries me if I'm Tennessee is maybe the unknown for Syracuse. I mean, they have a year on tape now of what they were doing schematically. The other thing would be like you have so many new pieces, and Angeli's played really well in limited time, but how's his offensive line going to hold up? Like, I don't think their defense is going to be very good this year. There's a lot of unknown. So it wouldn't necessarily stun me if it takes Tennessee a quarter to kind of feel this one out. But I think given some of the matchups here, like I could see Aguilar and one of these receivers maybe hitting on a deep pass or two. Also, I look at like trust factor for this matchup. Like, who do you trust more? I think Tennessee's defense is probably the one group you can trust. Like with all the change that Tennessee's got offensively, this will be a good test. I trust Tennessee defensively to kind of keep this game in check for them.
Yeah. All right. So what would be the next game on your list, Stephen?
We're going to Mike's favorite team. Florida State, they're hosting Alabama. So, tons of unknowns here for Florida State. They were 2-10 last year. Total debacle. Hired Gus Malzahn as the offensive coordinator. Thomas Castellanos is their quarterback. You may remember him when he started for BC last season when they played Missouri. Little bit of kind of mystery in offense because, well, I guess I shouldn't say there's probably not a ton of mystery. They have a quarterback who's undersized, who is going to run a lot. How this all comes together in the first game of the season is a bit of a mystery. I know one thing, though. All the talking Florida State's been doing, you can bet Alabama's defense is going to be ready on Saturday to bring the lumber. And so if I'm Florida State, this defense for Alabama on paper looks pretty nasty. And if Ty Simpson and these receivers for Alabama get going, it could be a long day for Florida State. They got a brand new revamped stadium. Renewed optimism. It's a new season after 2-10. So Alabama could deliver a crusher if they show up in Tallahassee and take care of business. A lot of intrigue, though, for me, for Alabama. Like, what does Ty Simpson do? Like, if Florida State really has success moving the ball, I'd be a little bit worried if I'm Alabama. But I think, like all these games, it may take a quarter for both these teams to kind of settle in. But on paper, I just think better defense for Alabama. And I like Ty Simpson in this offense to kind of be a good little point guard. And I think with all the new at Florida State, Alabama will figure it out.
Now, I have been very high on the Tide, high Tide, if you will. But and they're my pick to win the SEC. I've made no bones about that. So, again, I don't think they're going to struggle by any means. But I've been wrong before, Stephen. So let me ask you this, because the camp buzz is that the offense has looked spectacular with Ty Simpson and Ryan Grubb back in the fold here, engineering this offense. If that is accurate, let's say Alabama's been having their way with the Alabama defense. Does that concern you at all that maybe this defense is, because the defense was not great last year. The defense was a failing last year. They're bringing back a ton of production. It's year two. So we're kind of assuming that, that Cain Womack will have that defense playing a lot better with a lot of veterans. But if that's accurate, and you know, again, we could slice this with literally every team. If the offense is having a good day, well, man, no, defense must be terrible. And maybe not necessarily the case, but does it concern you at all if it's accurate that, that Alabama's offense is really having their way, or does that give you confidence that maybe the offense is more of the identity that Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb wanted all along?
I think I would have confidence that the offense is pretty dang good. I think that's my takeaway from that. You know, from a personnel standpoint, Alabama didn't lose a ton. I mean, they bring back a lot of experience, so it's not something like if they lost a ton, like coming into last year where they had so many new faces, especially in the secondary, I might be a little bit worried. That also brings up a point about this game. We talked about Gus Malzahn and Castellanos, that combo. I do not think Florida State wants this game to get into a they don't want to fall behind. I think they would love to make this kind of a lower possession game where they can run the ball, they can chew up the clock, they don't let Alabama get ahead on the scoreboard. Because I think if they jump ahead by like 10 points, 14 points, I don't think Florida State's really built to make that kind of a comeback with this passing offense. So this may not age well, but I'm pretty confident in Alabama's defense and offense going into the Saturday's game.
All right. Sounds like you're on that high tide as well. All right. So which game is next on your list here, Stephen, of the biggest challenge to the SEC?
We're going to Mississippi for Mississippi State at Southern Miss. Kind of like with Marshall, you look at the standings and go, oh, man, Southern Miss was 1-11 last year. They're not going to be a threat. I think this is a little bit of a dangerous game, though. They hired Charles Huff from Marshall. He won the Sun Belt Championship last year. He brought in, I think, over 50 transfers this year, including a handful from Marshall, including the starting quarterback, Braylon Braxton. He could really be a handful. So they have some experience coming over from the same staff. They've got a coach who knows how to win. I think Southern Miss is going to be a lot better this year. If there is a spot where I do have some questions about Southern Miss, I wonder how fast their offensive and defensive lines can mesh. Like, they have some good pieces around those two, but it may take some time, which brings me to Mississippi State. And if I'm looking at that going, a lot of new faces on Mississippi State's defense. How does this group also mesh in game one? But I think the group that you trust the most here has got to be that Mississippi State offense with Blake Shape and Jeff Lebby. They will find some ways to move the ball, but there are a ton of unknowns for both teams and what's probably going to be a difficult road environment. I don't want to say like hostile, because I'm sure a lot of Mississippi State fans are going to show up there too.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad. If I know it's on the road, but it would be bad if I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't know if Mississippi State's overwhelmed by old Southern Miss, then we're in for a long, long season down there in Starkville. You know what?
Be like shades of like Chad Morris almost, don't you think? Like the way those feelings kind of fell apart for Arkansas.
Right. And this is probably the program that I'm most concerned with, to where, you know, we all get it. We get fired up with the optimism. It's, you know, it's off season. We're going to do so much better, but it could be gone. That could be gone I was going to say a fart in the wind, you know what I mean? Like it's gone like that. If they struggle against this squad, man, yeah, danger zone is where we would be at.
If Mississippi State wants to have any shot at a bowl game, they got to win this game.
Yep. All right. So which game's next on your list here?
Going back to Atlanta for the Beamer Bowl, Virginia Tech and South Carolina meeting up in Atlanta. Virginia Tech, depending on where you look, I've got them number 11 in the ACC this season as far as where I'm projecting them to finish. a very difficult team to get a read on, because if you go back to the start of last season, they were kind of picked as a team on the rise, maybe a top 25 team. Ton of injuries, though, especially to starting quarterback Kyren Drones. He's healthy. They got a new offensive coordinator in Phillip Montgomery. You may remember him. He was at Baylor back some years ago. That style should mesh really well with Kyren Drones. The problem for Virginia Tech is they went very portal heavy, offensive line, running back, receiver, defense. They have two new coordinators on both sides of the ball, and their defense was an issue on the stat sheet last year as far as stopping the run and against the pass. So it's a lot of unknown here for Virginia Tech. And if I'm South Carolina, I'm kind of worried about how this team is a little bit of a mystery. But the spread's only 7.5. So the folks out in Vegas, not necessarily buying that this is going to be a blowout on paper.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Where so much change for Virginia Tech, and yet there's confidence just based purely on the spread that it could be a close game. So obviously it would be a much different story if this was in Williams-Brice Stadium, but it's pretty interesting, isn't it?
I would much rather have this game on home sites, wouldn't you? Right. I mean, if neutral sites are the only way to get high profile showdowns, sign me up. But I would much rather see these two teams play on campus. Virginia Tech's got a great home environment. But also, wondering about South Carolina, and I'm wondering if that's where some of the odds makers' like doubts are. In knowing that they have so many new faces on defense in the front seven, how does the pieces fit together on the offensive line and receiver around Sellers? I have a high degree of trust factor in Lenora Sellers to carry them to a win in this game. But also wondering, like, does it take them a couple quarters to kind of get their feet under them with some of the turnover too? And especially if Virginia Tech's offense clicks, like, you could see these two teams maybe trading some scores. So it's a dangerous opener for South Carolina. But I think, you know, I think based upon if Sellers carries them, they should be leaving Atlanta at 1-0.
And again, there's really no way to kind of put a metric on any of this, but it's unique. It's away from home. It's a neutral field. It's an NFL stadium. It's Sunday. It's in the middle of the day. It'll just, you know, that all these things could play a factor. I'm not saying it's going to determine the game by any means, but who deals with that better could go a long way to determining this outcome, don't you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of unknown already at the start of the season, given the transition in personnel. I mean, I think Virginia Tech's got less than 5 returning starters from last season. So you add in, for both teams, turnover, coaching changes, sort of that unknown, new elements, different day. Like, there's a lot to navigate here. So that kind of, like, all the factors into, like, even more so than ever, we know less about these teams than we did like 5-6 years ago when the portal wasn't so busy, which makes for greater games, but it also adds, like, trying to figure out what the heck's going to happen on Sundays a little bit harder.
Right. So, all right, if South Carolina, Virginia Tech was this high on this list, I can't wait to see who's next.
We're going to Lexington, Mike. Toledo coming to Kentucky. I think this is a dangerous game. I've been saying this for a couple weeks, Mike. Toledo's got a good quarterback. They're experienced. Chip Tranium, you know, he's bounced around a bit. He was at Kentucky. He's Toledo's starting running back for this game. So all kinds of old SEC friends making their comeback in week one. Also, Toledo, the best defense, or one of the best defenses last year in the MAC. They are dealing with some turnover up front. Which brings me to where I think Kentucky maybe could take advantage of them is if your running backs are healthy, maybe you wear down a defense that is dealing with some turnover up front. However, Tucker Gleason, the quarterback for Toledo, one of the best in the MAC, great receivers, also pretty good special teams for Toledo. This is one of those teams, like, if we look at track records for MAC upsets, experience, good quarterback, a coach who can pull off one of these two, Jason Candle for Toledo. I would say if I'm Kentucky, I am very, very nervous going into Saturday.
Right. And this is a popular upset prediction with a lot of people. So, we will learn a lot, I think, about Kentucky, hearing the negativity. We'll see how motivated Mark Stoops and company is. You know, I get a sense, Stephen, that they're going to blow the doors off Toledo or they're going to lose. I don't know if it's going to be anywhere in between. Like, I don't know if Kentucky wins a four-quarter battle with Toledo. You know what I mean? So I hope that they prove the doubters wrong and are a relevant team this season. But I don't know. I mean, it feels like the rails could come off very quickly.
Wouldn't stun me. You remember that game in, what was it, 2023, where it was Eastern Kentucky and it was like 28-17 or something like that? It felt like kind of a sluggish kind of win for Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can get away with that against Eastern Kentucky. I don't think they can get away with that against Toledo. So to your point, if it, you know, veteran teams, especially experience in this era, like they're hard to find. Like you just look at like, here's this team is two returning starters, three. Toledo's bringing back a lot of dudes that smashed Mississippi State last season in Starkville. They're not going to be intimidated by going to Lexington and try to win this game. So with all the new at Kentucky, Toledo's already driving 60 miles an hour coming into Lexington. And that just, that to your point, adds to the intrigue of this opener.
Right. Well, what adds to the intrigue, what a great cousin he is, Stephen. Liquid Flames just gifted a membership. This time to Ole Miss. Ole Miss, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy of old Liquid Flames, cousin Dustin. We appreciate you, buddy. Go Gators. We appreciate you. All right. Da-da-da-da. Who's next on your list here?
Going to Columbus for what I think could be a preview of a playoff game. Some might have it as a national championship preview. Texas at Ohio State. Man, I can't wait for this game on Saturday. I mean, all offseason, the hype of one versus two, one versus three, whatever it is. I mean, the individual talent on the field, Jeremiah Smith for Ohio State, the receiver, safety Caleb Downs, two of the best individual players, if not one and two in college football. Then you've got all the defenders for Texas, Taft, Muhammad, Simmons, Hill, Arch Manning. I could keep going, Mike. The individual talent is ridiculous here. We're going to find out right away about Arch Manning and also Julian Sain for Ohio State, the Alabama transfer, former five-star. So you've got great talent, defending national champion, a team in Texas that wants to knock off the defending national champion, two rising star quarterbacks. There is a ton of intrigue for this one. And we'll say this. For all the hype about Arch Manning, and I'm, you know, I picked him in the Heisman, Julian Sain, I still think it would not stun me if Texas puts the ball in the hands of Trey Wisner and CJ Baxter and challenges an Ohio State front that is very thin at defensive tackle, even with a revamped offensive line, says, are you going to stop us? And Arch Manning just does two or three nice plays, and that's enough for Texas to win. So this is going to be a fascinating game on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's unique in other ways too, Stephen, where this feels like two programs that are ready for the moment. There have been plenty of games that are similar to this. Remember a couple of years ago, Alabama and Florida State played, and it was hyped up as like the best opening game of all time. And Alabama just beat the hell out of Florida State, and Jimbo basically quit that day and became Texas A&M's coach a couple months later. There's others too, but I think of this is a throwback that I remember. I think Steven will remember because he's such a pro. But one of the first openers that I remember was like Penn State Arizona. I think it was like 1999, and Arizona was like, I think I don't think they had been to the Rose Bowl, but they were like, this is the team. I think they won like five games that year. You know what I mean? So where. There have been games of this magnitude where it was preseason two top five teams, but I don't think there's any way that either one of these teams is like a total fraud. But my point is, I think these are legit top five programs going head to head. They're ready for the moment, and I think they'll give us a classic game. And the fact that it's in Columbus, you know, I think that makes it. Very, very interesting, because I think on a neutral field and obviously in Austin, I think most people would pick Texas to win this football game. But who knows? I think it'll go down to the wire. And, man, I just can't wait for it. And I hope, YouTube TV shows it to us.
Yeah. I think you bring up a good point about sort of like the bust factor for this game. It feels very low. You know, if one team wins, like running away with it, I might actually think it could be Texas, because I think like their defensive line could take over. And I mean, keep in mind, they limited Jeremiah Smith, like what, one catch for 3 yards last year in the Cotton Bowl. And I mean, these two teams just played in the Cotton Bowl, and Jack Sawyer's heroics kept Texas from having a shot, you know, from taking this game into overtime. So they weren't that far apart last year. Ohio State's losing a ton. One other thing, too, I do think Ohio State has downgraded significantly a coordinator. Brian Hartline's taking over for Ryan Day as the play caller. I think that's probably okay, because you get Ryan Day in your headset all game. Matt Patricia as defensive coordinator, I'm probably going to sell that one based upon his NFL track record. So this would be interesting to see how Ohio State is reloaded, but also just to, you know, it could be one of those statement wins if Texas goes into Columbus and wins, and sort of like, you know, another notch that shows how far Sark has moved this program forward.
Right. I also think it means more for Texas, because Ohio State, I mean, they could get embarrassed and they'll be just fine, because they play in a weak ass league. They'll bounce right back. It's a different story in the SEC. You get embarrassed week one, the whole thing not that it would on Texas, but many programs would derail after a week one loss. All right. What would be next on your list here, Stephen?
Auburn at Baylor. Friday night, man, another game I cannot wait for. Auburn, a slight favorite on the road at Baylor. Strength versus strength. Auburn's defense, which I think is going to be one of the best in the SEC, against Baylor's offense, one of the best in the Big 12. Baylor finished 2024 by winning 6 out of their last 7. The way they turned it around was Sawyer Robertson, old SEC friend. He took over at quarterback. Baylor's offense took off. I mean, Robertson torched LSU in the bowl game for, I think, over 400 yards. One of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12. Good skill talent, great offensive line, and a good group of receivers. Baylor's offense is loaded. This is what gets interesting, is like, if it's strength versus strength, it's question mark versus question mark on the other side. Baylor's defense, Dave Aranda is the defensive coordinator, play caller. They gave up almost 30 points a game last year in Big 12 play. So curious to see how far this group has improved, and also Auburn's offense. If they can put up some big totals against this Baylor defense, is it Auburn's offense being good, or is it Baylor's defense being bad? Either way, we're going to leave this game with a lot more certainty about just how far the Jackson Arnold Hugh Freeze experience is going. And so I can't wait for Friday night just to figure out what the heck we got in Jackson Arnold and his offense this year.
Yeah, I mean, this could be the game of the weekend. That, I think we're fortunate that this one's Friday, because it's the drama, the storylines, all that, no matter the result, is going to be fascinating to see. This is probably number one on my list for most interesting, because I think it could have the most long-lasting impact, if that makes sense, of any of these SEC games, at least.
I think so. Just thinking about what happens if Auburn's offense struggles, and maybe Hugh Freeze was right. Maybe they do need to play 3 quarterbacks in this game. if Jackson Arnold really struggles, then you're opening up another discussion, like who's going to be the guy when you get to SEC play. It is a tough spot, even though Baylor isn't maybe the best defense in the Big 12, just going on the road to Waco. So I always think about the first couple of weeks as like, it's a learning experience. We're figuring out these teams. This will tell us a lot. It's better. Probably it's Auburn would probably rather play like an Alabama A&M, but I think for us trying to learn a lot in one setting, this game will do it.
All right. So what's the next game on your list here, Stephen?
It is the All Tigers showdown at Clemson, for LSU at Clemson Saturday night. Man, the storylines in this game, two of the best quarterbacks in college football, Cade Klubnik, Garrett Nussmeier. LSU trying to win a season opener under Brian Kelly. For Clemson, national championship aspirations. They could probably lose this game and be just fine, because they're probably going to be favored in the rest of their games this season. LSU, the schedule's pretty tough the rest of the way. So something to keep in mind and kind of weigh in, like what this means if this result happens with the new playoff. You know, if LSU loses, it's not the end of the world, but the schedule is hard. They could still get back in it. But still, the narratives, if LSU loses another season opener, I think there's a couple matchups to watch here if I'm LSU. Number one, the offensive line against Clemson's defensive front. Clemson's defensive front is arguably number one in the country by most. Like, you know, I rated them as the best defensive line in the country. They could take advantage of an LSU offensive line that's got four new starters. The other one is LSU's defense. I'm buying this group being better this year. Clemson's got Cade Klubnik. They've got a deep receiving core, veteran offensive line. If LSU's defense plays well here, that is a great sign going forward when we get into SEC play. So very, very, very excited to see Saturday night how some of these preseason things we've been talking about with LSU start to play out.
Right. And here's the beautiful part, Stephen, which I think that's the toughest opponent, right? So we're out of games to discuss. All this many months and many podcasts of all these discussions and talking points and this, that, and the other, we were all shut up for a couple hours and actually watch these games, and narratives will get blown up in our face or confirmed. Mostly blown up in my face, confirmed in yours probably. But that's the beauty of it, right? To where all the things we think we know, we'll find out whether we actually know them or not starting Thursday night and going all the way to Monday for college football. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
Oh, it is. But it's the beauty, but also it's, you know, there's still 11 games left for every team after this week. So it's never as bad or as good as it looks, because if you're playing an FCS opponent, the scoreboard is going to be one-sided, but it might cover up for some stuff. If LSU loses, maybe they struggle here or there. Maybe Clemson just is the best team in the country. So I would say it's never as bad. It's never as bad or as never as good as it looks. And we should also just keep in mind, it's just one game in a very small sample size. That doesn't mean I'm very interested to see the overreactions come Saturday night.
Right. I was about to, you know, you just made me realize this time a year ago, man, were we down in the maybe not you, but I know I was. I know Shane particularly was down on South Carolina and just how awful they looked against Old Dominion, and how Shane Beamer, you know, Shane had Beamer's ass fired. And we all know what happened there. They were the hottest team in the conference, arguably the country, at the end of the season. So one weekend will not define the season, as you so eloquently put there, but that's not going to stop us from, I promise you, there will not be any shortage of overreactions from this guy on this channel as we watch all this amazing football over the weekend. You know what?
What team could play possum this weekend, kind of like South Carolina did against Old Dominion? Do you have a candidate in mind?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. One team. How about Tennessee? What if Tennessee looks really, really rough against Syracuse? And I mean, Tennessee fans are sick of me downplaying Tennessee, but I don't think it would be like that wild for Tennessee to barely eke one out. And then everybody, I've already seen it. I mean, hell, someone predicted us. I mean, they're just a troll, I would imagine. But someone told us in the YouTube comments on last night's show, Stephen, Tennessee's going 2-10. You know, like those narratives are going to, not 2-10, that's ridiculous, but like 4-8, you know, if they beat Syracuse by 2 points or something stupid, you know, people are going to be like, well, Josh Heupel's got exposed, yada, yada, yada. Similar to South Carolina last year. And I think all you got to do is swing one game that people don't have you winning. And Tennessee's right back in the college football playoff. So to answer your question, the team that could be playing possum could be Tennessee.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I wouldn't be stunned if it's ugly against Syracuse, only because of all, like, you have a first-time starter, a quarterback. Like, he's been a good G5 quarterback, but he's stepping up in competition to the power conferences. He's only been there for like sort of summer and like fall. you've had receivers banged up and you've got a brand new offensive line. Like, that wouldn't stun me if it's like a work in progress for Tennessee. I was trying to come up with another candidate, and the one I kept coming back to was like Missouri almost. You know, like I could almost like see Missouri just winning like maybe 34-0. It's fine. We're not like overly like impressed by anything. And then they use that because they're saving all their good stuff to beat Kansas in week two.
How about this as a candidate, Stephen? How about Bama? Could that be a candidate? Yeah. I mean, because we can sit here and say we don't know much about these teams, but one team we really won't know much about till we actually see them possibly is Florida State, with two new coordinators, lots of new players. And I'm certainly not projecting that Florida State is going to threaten Alabama much, but if they do, that shouldn't be absolutely stunning.
I think that's fair because of the element of surprise. You know, and I think, you know, Gus and also Tony White, their defensive coordinator, I think Florida State made two solid hires for what they needed. And, I mean, they brought guys in like Squirrel White from Tennessee at receiver. They've got seniors all over the offensive line they brought into the portal. Like, if Florida State last year in the portal chose potential, they chose production and experience this year. So interested to see how that translates. Like, every team is different on the scale of like transfers. Like, it either takes a long time, maybe they get it going. But because of the element of the unknown with all these teams, it wouldn't stun me if like maybe it's like Alabama doesn't cover the spread, just because it's like they took a quarter or two to figure out what Florida State was doing. And as we know, Gus loves to throw a trick play. Maybe Florida State scores on special teams, and that kind of steals some momentum that Alabama had early and takes them some time to kind of overcome that.
Right. Yeah, man, we could sit here and talk about it all night, right? And that probably would be fun because we'd eat up time until we actually get to kickoff. But I think I'm about to pass out here, Steven. You got anything else before we hop off for this episode?
Mike, I'm just fired up for week one, man. We've had a great offseason talking about all of these things. I'm just glad to say, let's close the book on the preseason. Let's get to the games on the field. Let's react. Let's see what happens. And can't wait to make some predictions later this week.
Yeah, no doubt. So Steven will be back Wednesday to make his predictions for the upcoming week in the SEC. Next episode should be tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, with the latest Roush Hour podcast. So hopefully no technical difficulties like we had this morning. That was a nightmare. But again, we do appreciate each and every one of you for sticking it out and hanging out with us here. College football, SEC football, finally back. Could not be any sweeter. Before we go, as always, Stephen, can you remind the cousins how to follow you and how to find your work?
Absolutely. You can check out all my work at AflonSports.com. I've got a big week one preview already up. So if you want to find a reason to watch every game, including Merrimack at Kent State, I got you covered. You can also follow me on Twitter at AflonSteven, Stephen L. CFB over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Stephen. Can't wait till we chat again on Wednesday. Until then, we will catch you on the next one. Thank you to each and every one of you for hanging out. We're one day closer to some SEC. Thanks for everything. Catch you tomorrow. And as always, I should have mentioned this, of course, but Cousin Shane, he'll be back in the evening as normal. Nothing changing with the evening show. We're just trying to give you double content here tomorrow. So we'll catch you tomorrow, 11 a.m., 10 Central, with a Roush Hour. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.